welcome to the Polarized Podcast. I am your host, James. Welcome back, everybody, to another scintillating episode of your favorite podcast. and this is quite the ep. We were in Paul Thomas Anderson territory. Now we're in the Coen Brothers territory with Hail, comma, Caesar, exclamation point. When did this bad boy come out? 2016, February 5th. It has a certified fresh 86% on Rotten Tomatoes. It has a negative of 50, making it a 44% on Rotten Tomatoes. Negative of 60, I guess. That's how I do math here on the Rotten Tomatoes math.
Oh, you math nerds out there.
60 is the middle ground on Rotten Tomatoes math. That's your boiling point. I don't know if they're Fahrenheit, Celsius, and Rotten Tomatoes score. Their algorithm is something that just befuddles me to this day, even doing all these episodes. How it works, what it means, how they come up with those numbies, who knows?
We'll never know.
That's gonna be our saga as a podcast is just riding crazy. Riding that wave of numbies. This is a podcast about polarizing movies, if you were wondering. Movies that audiences and critics disagree on Rotten Tomatoes. And this one, those critics just freaking love it. It's about Hollywood. It's about movies. It's by the Coen brothers. And they had a great time. And that audience did not care for it so much. But I want to hear what we think here at the Polarized Kingdom. And it's not just me. I'm going to bring in my number one guy, Mr. Brandon Stables.
It's your number one guy.
He's my number one guy.
Hey, how's it going, James Man?
It's me, the James Man, and I'm back discussion of polarizing movies.
Yeah, to a peek behind the curtain, we've been away from the pod for a minute, it feels like, right? It feels like a little breaky
break. We had a little respite.
A little respite, because some life stuff happened. Had a B-day, and it's just been B-day mania over here in June. And it's not fully over yet, but yeah, it feels like we've taken quite the respite from this pod, and I'm excited to get back to talking about movies, because it's not like we haven't had some time to watch movies and to think about and to talk about movies. We've been together and talked about movies, in this time off, not recording, but it feels good to be back. Yeah.
Yeah. What are some highlights since we've been away? Any highlights you've been watching?
Yeah,
Highlight
was showing people Everybody Wants Some by Richard Linklater. Okay. I had a really wonderful day of just having beers, hanging out, and watching Everybody Wants Some. And the people that everybody but me had seen it or had not seen it, and to watch it with other people, it was really wonderful, because it is a very, very good movie. It's a very, very good movie. Everybody should go watch it. But I mean, God, that's just, that's the highlight. But I could go on. There's been nothing but movies and TVs lately. James, how about you? What's a movie standout in the spirit of time we've been away?
I'll have to watch Everybody Wants Some all the way through. I kind of was walking in and out during our birthday festivities is when you had it on, and it looked fun. And that Glenn Powell guy is a fun guy. And Richard Linklater has a new movie with him too. I'd like to check out.
Hitman.
Yeah, but that's cool to hear it from you, because I haven't really. I feel like I haven't heard anyone who's seen that movie. It makes sense that the people you saw it with, no one had seen it either.
Oh, for sure.
I don't think I've ever talked to anybody who'd seen it, because I'd always be browsing and shit and be like, oh, that seems fun. Yeah, it almost seems like. But then maybe, and this is probably just boiling it down to simplifying a little bit, and it's probably so much more than just like the 80s Dazed and Confused is kind of how I always looked at it, but I'm sure it's that and more and much deeper than that.
Absolutely. It's very slice of life and shows a lot of different sides of the culture at the time. And it does it really well in a way that there's definitely some drama to it. But overall, it's such a wonderful Saturday afternoon movie because it never really gets too crazy. And overall, it's just a bunch of people like figuring shit out, which is just absolutely enjoyable. I couldn't highly recommend that movie enough. I haven't seen Hitman yet, but I'm excited to do so. Yeah.
Same. Yeah, me too. For me, I finally, for whatever reason, took long enough to finish like the very last couple episodes, but I finished Succession. I finished that. I done did it.
Oh, it's really? Over.
Yeah. I'm late to the party and everything. And no.
Let's talk about it.
I mean,
what'd you think of the ending?
No spoiler. No review of it.
It's been long enough. So what did you think of the ending?
Well, I don't know. For me, if I were to listen to a podcast and they started talking about it, I would be kind of pissed because I just finished it. So I don't know if I should.
Then can we do the thing where
spoiler?
So we're going to can we just note it? So we're at spoiler alert. We're at 6:24. Whenever we're done with it, we'll just mark that. And then we'll just. Is there any way of like editing back in being like, if you don't want to hear the rest?
I could figure that out. All right. I'll do a little Succession segment of
spoiler alert.
My favorite character had always been Tom. So for that to come through at the end was something that was very interesting.
Did you want that to happen? Ultimately,
I was very satisfied with how it ended. I wasn't sure what I wanted. I just wanted it. To be satisfied. I just wanted it to be exciting and unpredictable in a way that wouldn't cheapen or lessen the impact of the ending. Like not a similar show, but like a How I Met Your Mother. It's like you could have just gone right down the middle and made it simple and just How I Met Your Mother, but they try to make it all like, whoa, but actually it's this and that and this and we and making it just I don't know.
The shows have done that, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and this had a little element of pulling the rug out from under you a little bit and then having it settle in a way that I thought it did all the characters justice, which is what I wanted.
So how surprised were you that he didn't get Jeremy Strong's character didn't
I was open to that being a possibility for sure. I wasn't sure what way, shape, or form it would take if he didn't get it. The thing that made it extremely satisfying for me was the callback to what happened in the first season and then him telling them about it in like the third, second or third.
Yeah, absolutely.
That made it
unforgivable
extremely satisfying because that was
just holds it to him
constantly in the back of my mind of like, that moment
he did this
and for them to bring it up at the very last moment and for it not to feel like a cheap trick for them to just use that but
not cheap trick the band you're saying right
you know if they showed up in the season finale of Succession and
just started playing
and
then you're like this makes sense they're you know
I just want the, you know what Kendall's
I
like
want I want you to want me exactly. And then you're like oh okay
that's what Kendall would be singing
it would be
but yeah it was a great ending and it was a good show. I don't know if I'm like as like oh my god Succession's like the best show ever but I'm definitely happy I watched it. And I'm like really happy with how it didn't go on longer than it needed to, because it definitely had the possibility of doing that. And then even watching like a brief interview after they did a little blurb after the guy, the creator was just talking about how, it was a good place to end and the way it left it and everything. I don't know. It seemed like it was ended at its peak, which is perfect for TV.
Yeah, I agree.
And for a movie, I'd say, when we watched Repo Man together, it was a blast.
Whoa, super cool.
That was something that I had never seen. And then I watched it on my own. I was like, next time I'm like with people, namely you and Danny, I would try to make that a reality. And the fact that it did happen and we were in a good place, all of us together to chill and watch it and even have it be kind of background and kind of tune out was like the perfect thing for that movie. So to experience that in that way, was a lot of fun, and it was so cool to unearth something that, yeah, I didn't know anything really, or I thought maybe what I did think I knew about it, it just blew me away how weird and on its own sort of wavelength it is. It's such an interesting movie. Now it's going to be in my lexicon for movies that I recommend it at certain times.
Yeah, and rightfully so. Like, it was so funny watching it with Danny, where multiple times throughout the viewing, Danny was like, "Is this my favorite movie ever?" You know, and just would like look back at us and go like, "So I love everything about what's happening in this movie." And we're like, "Yeah, Danny, yeah, absolutely, man." And he's like, "So yeah, everything about this is great." It was fantastic. Yeah, we're all just, you know, that's
and why. And you called the ending of that one too. You're like, okay, get in the car and fly away into outer space. So, Brandon, you just nailed it. And then the movie does exactly what you wanted to do, and you didn't even know you wanted it until like 5 minutes before. And then you're like, yeah, when it happens, yeah. It's perfect.
It's perfect. Yeah. Oh, that was such a good movie. And that's also too, just, yeah, I'm so glad we did that, because that's why I wanted that weekend, was to do things like that, is to, you know, have everybody around watching. You know, watching movies and talking about movies, you know.
Yeah, having that audience reaction in something is so fun, especially when it's, yeah, small crew of buddies. Obviously the movie going experience is so fun, but I cherish those moments for sure myself as well.
Yeah, me too, man.
Lots of fun.
So speaking of cherishing movies, the directors of this, the Coen brothers of the movie we're doing today, Hail Caesar, I cherish them as well. I you know, they're part of our guys. You know, I've brought that up multiple times on this pod. We got our guys, right? Seminal directors of our generation that have made so many good movies that we were, you know, been a part of our lexicon. And the Coen brothers have made movies that are that. But the movie that we're talking about today is not something anybody I know really references. And so going into this, I knew about this for sure, but.
This is your first time?
Yeah, it is.
It is kind of the everybody wants some situation.
It is a little bit, because you're right. Like, nothing
in terms of like blind spot, I don't know.
I was going to say, like, the conflict in this movie is so, whatever, like, nothing ever seems in, I don't know, even with the kidnapping, nothing ever, this movie doesn't have an air about it where it's like, oh, something, there's a big problem that needs to get solved. This movie is pretty just cruising.
Yeah, it has that element of like Lebowski, or and then a mix of Barton Fink, I guess. But the Lebowski of it all is kind of funny in that, yeah. We just talked about Inherent Vice, and there's this, you know, very much more cut and dry mystery, and not even, they tell you who's behind it right off the bat, yeah, essentially, right, but yeah. A mystery, yeah. To Mannix, Josh Brolin's character, as to, you know, who kidnapped this movie star. But the humor comes in the fact that that George Clooney ends up being kind of willing, and also the people that are
manipulative, and yeah,
there's like no muscle there. They're all just like fucking wispy communists,
or they're just like silly actors. This movie is just filled with people with insecurities and are easily manipulated by the main character. And in comparison to Big Lebowski, like, the dude represents a type of person that is really relatable, because it's like that it's like the generation that grew up during Vietnam and has so much commentary in how he approaches things to that. And the fact that this movie is centered on a head of a studio loses some of that edge to me that Coen brothers have typically had, where their main characters are about like silly, not silly, but like very realistic everyman's.
Yeah, it's really going in on the era, this era of Hollywood and the studio system, and having fun with the studio system at the time, and these, you know, what is Josh Brolin's technique? Like, what is the job on the door?
Head of the studio.
It's something head like has some funny name or whatever. But he's kind of like a fixer. You know,
he's kind of like in Entourage. He's kind of like Jeremy Piven's character when he becomes like the head of a studio, but he's not. It's like the relationship he has with. Like that kind of thing. Like, he is the manager almost, but there are much more like powerful men that are funding and who are responsible for the ownership of the studio, but like, he's the manager of it. Like, he's the head honcho on the ground.
He manages the talent in a way that is a bygone era, because every actor has their own separate manager and their own people and their own team. And at this time, they signed actors onto these contracts that would make them exclusive to Capitol Records, you know, Capitol Pictures, whatever they called it in this one. And
I found that so interesting.
So those people would just be, you know, essentially they're
players.
Yeah. And so like in the whole journey of what's his face?
Han Solo,
cowboy, yeah, old whatever his name is, all the humor lies within those circumstances in it and rising up, but there's not a lot of like poppy humor, but it's
Alden Ehrenreich,
yeah, and when he gets approached while he's eating just the biggest thing of beans,
like, which he was excited to do, and he's like, "This is what I do. I go to the thing, big old
scoop, like five scoops in a row," and they're like, "We're completely changing your image. You're not a stunt cowboy horse rider. You're gonna be in this, you know, nice prestige picture by Lawrence Lorenz."
Yeah,
it's like stuff like that is just. It's funny on paper, and it's like, yes, this is, I see why critics like this. Cause it is the kind of, it's like,
so old Hollywood. Yeah. Which the critics just are such suckers.
A lot of references to old stuff and like, you know, just not, sorry, continue.
No, but it's that idea of like critics understand the history and how these deals are made. The average person has no clue about the idea of an actor being an employee of a studio. So that's why they're featured in like pictures or players and pictures that the studio makes. And also too, how the studio is by and large responsible for the development of their image as well. And there's this whole, like, the man, you know, like, it's not an actor coming in and necessarily being like, this is who my image is going to be. These are the movies that I'm going to do. They're going to just be hired by a studio, and then the studio takes over as to how to grow their, you know, stardom and their
image. Can you sing? Can you dance? You know, what are your talents?
What's your talents? Yeah. And then placing them in all of these, wherever they're needed, because they're just employees, which this movie also in my mind kind of takes pains to make the joke of like, are you a principal actor or are you an extra? Like, it comes up like multiple times about this idea that like somebody who drugged George Clooney's character, was he an extra? Because extras just, you know, you never know what they're up to. And then, or the person who's on the cross towards the end, the guy's like, did you have this lunch or this lunch? Because that's going to determine whether or not you're a, you know, get paid a certain rate and all of this shit, or you receive certain kind of like, amenities and stuff. And the movie loves all of that. Is so about and interested in, like, also too, a thing that I think in my mind was really representative of that is behind Josh Brolin, Eddie Mannix's desk is the map of the studio to show you how many sound stages there are. And then they've also talked about like, we're shooting on this and this sound stage, and Capitol Records has so many sound stages, so they're allowed to make so many movies at a single time. And then you have to be making these kind of movies every year because these are what sell. And there is a shitload of like insider Hollywood stuff in there that, yeah, of course, critics fucking loved, you know?
Yeah. And the placement and the roles that actors play within that studio system is definitely something that is stressed in the movie. And then the whole crux of it is where writers fit within that as well. And it is pretty funny that like
it is,
they're so pissed off about not getting their dues, which there was just a big writer's strike and everything too. We're so pissed off and like, yeah. And it's in a very kind of capitalistic, and it's called Capital Pictures, and they're fighting, you know, it's yeah, and Coen brothers are just like, ah, that was so good. But them like not getting their dues for writing the material and everything and getting mad at the whole system, and how they're explaining that to George Clooney is like, the humor is all there.
It's on Front Street.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's really
in your face. And then within that they can do kind of like the vignettes of old Hollywood as well. And essentially Coen brothers are able to make like 3 to 5 whatever different old time Hollywood movies while they're making this, and they get to do it in kind of an old fashioned way. They got Roger Deakins as their cinematographer, which is pretty amazing.
Epic. And then,
it ends up being, and this is what I was kind of like coming down to in the middle of watching it, like near the middle of it. It was like, is this a couple questions of like, is this a better movie than Babylon, or which one is more fun? And I'm like,
yes,
this one, Hail Caesar, might be a better movie. I don't know, but Babylon seems to be more fun and interesting to watch.
Correct. Yes.
And it's more exciting, and it's doing a lot, and it's trying to say a lot more. But some of the notes that it was hitting were similar for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I'm so glad you
more
brought
cynical,
this up.
I guess. In Hail Caesar's more cynical. I don't know.
I was also just thinking about it by and large. Like I'm glad you brought this up about, you know, Babylon, because I'll talk about that and we'll continue. But I just want to say, like, this also to me now is something legacy directors do, is they go to this like old Hollywood well, and they're like almost like can't help themselves. Like, I have to tell you,
I gotta turn the camera back on me.
Old Hollywood, what my version of old Hollywood is. And there's every fucking major director does this, where they have to take a swing at how they feel old Hollywood is. And so in relation to Babylon, like, Babylon is more interesting for sure, because it shows much more humanity in the negative side than this. There's very little of the negative side in this, which is what I would say is kind of frustrating by directors who have shown how, with Fargo, how much they're like want to show the like real gritty humanity of stuff, and how that can be like funny too. Like how people are like naturally so self-interested and make stupid decisions and get themselves in over their head because they think they're better than everybody. And there's so much that makes sense why that would also work in this picture, but it ends up being so not focused on depth and more focused on like, how do we just make what was like things back then, and being really wrapped up in that. And I find that fascinating, because it's almost like, good movie be damned, I really just want to make a dance number. I want to talk about like the system and all of that. And it ends up being kind of bizarre and left me like really in a weird vibe, because I was like, it's so self-indulgent to me, this movie. And it's clear how self-indulgent it is, that it doesn't care about maybe going deeper when it should. And that was frustrating to me watching
it. Yeah. The behind the scenes thing I saw was something like, this was a joke that Coen brothers had with like George Clooney or something, of like, this movie that they were going to that they were going to make with him, you know, being kidnapped as Justice Caesar would, just like a very loose idea.
Funny. Yeah. Funny.
And the commune and by communists and old time Hollywood and stuff. And how it was described in this behind the scenes thing, which was on the special features of the movie, was like, George Clooney just eventually started saying that was his next movie. And then people started asking the Coen brothers about it, of like, oh, so you're doing this movie with George Clooney, and they hadn't even written a script yet. And so they're like, George Clooney was like, yeah. And they just eventually had to write that script because people were just talking about it so much. So it does have that feeling, like when you say self-indulgent, it does have that feeling of like the loose bones structure is there, and we have ways to make funny situations and jokes and show a slideshow into old time Hollywood. But the stakes and what occurs from beginning to end doesn't really change much. And there isn't really much of consequence that goes any sort of which way. but that's like Big Lebowski in certain ways too. So it's like, there's a way to tell that story that, you know, even something that is when something doesn't happen or something that could be a point in itself, whatever sort of nihilistic sort of way you want to say, like No Country for Old Men or something, that's a little different, but there's ways to kind of get into the meaninglessness of things as well, which I think they're really great at. This one isn't as effective. I think it has some funny things going on and some fun ideas, but overall, yeah. I have seen this as my third time seeing it. I believe I saw it in theaters and one time on home video or whatever. But even those times, it's like, yeah, I don't, even as it was wrapping up this most recent time, I was trying to remember how exactly it ended. And that is kind of like a telling thing of like, it doesn't have a super strong ending. It just kind of like fades away a little bit, which
Hollywood's going to be Hollywood.
Yeah, and Manic's just like, I'm not going to take that. What is Lockheed fucking contract? I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to keep doing this. And that sort of thing where you can tell that's like where that character as Manic wants things to go, is where he can self automate in a way where he was talking to his wife that one time, that one night, whatever, when he got back.
What's her face? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And it's just like such a healthy relationship.
The drummer easy of a conversation that was, like,
just like their relationship was really healthy and I forget, yeah, what my, totally. I forget what my bigger point was, but busy guy and everything. Yeah. And she brings up the soccer game, and he kind of, because like that was a conversation that they had earlier in the day when she calls on the phone of like, oh, you're gonna have to talk with the coach or whatever. He doesn't want to, there's some issue with it, and he was trying to figure, and he had an idea of how to fix it. And then he finds out later that it worked itself out.
Yep.
And there's things that in his life how I look at his arc is learning to let go a little bit, I guess.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, it's such a funny thing, because it's looking at this guy that's like so on top of his game, and for what this job is, he's really fucking good at it. But that kind of personality that job requires is somebody that's also very hard on himself. So it starts in the confessional. He constantly goes back, and even the father's like, come on, man. Like, you're not that. Yeah. It's okay. Have a fucking cigarette, okay, dude. Like, I'll have one with you. And
that's a cigarette. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So like, to know that that's your main character, that's where you're coming from, and the walls are closing in a certain way. But overall, it feels very low stakes. And the thing that is the biggest deal is played for probably the most laughs is Clooney being a absolute buffoon.
Oh yeah, buffoony.
George Buffoony.
George Buffoony.
He would love that. We got to get George in here in one of these times.
George, get in here.
George would love that. He's a big prankster.
He's such a huge.
What'd you think about that crew of commies? The actors playing them.
Oh, so we got
Bernard.
we got Bernard, and he is having a rough time.
He's an angry commie.
He's an angry commie. Who else do we got? We got what's his face taking the pictures?
Fisher Stevens.
Yeah. I love Fisher Stevens so fucking much. Speaking of Succession, watching Succession. Yeah, dude, Fisher Stevens. Cool. Oh man, he's the best.
And then you got the guy from Mulholland Drive. He's in a lot of other stuff too, but he's kind of like has big eyes and kind of just standing the whole time. They're all smoking, yeah.
And then the who's taking the pictures?
I'm not sure.
He's got that like cleft lip.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I know who you're talking about. And then the guy narrating never actually like says anything. He says like one line like on the boat at the end, but he's like the tall guy with the beard.
He's like the narrator
for the whole movie, but then he's just also one of the commies. And then like at the end, they drop the money. He's just kind of like, oh.
He has such a weird, oh. Oh. Yeah. Oh, God. He was in a movie about voice acting. He's in a bunch of stuff, too.
Yeah, I just saw him in that show about the Clippers called Clipped. The Donald Sterling.
Terrible name.
The Donald Sterling thing. Do you know the entendre about that? Why it's called Clipped?
No, because it's the Clippers, right?
Yeah, but there's a double meaning.
Oh, okay. I just in my mind, I was like the Lakers got winning time and then Clippers got a clipped.
It is pretty. No, I agree. It is pretty lame, but there is a double meaning there. Like, because Donald Sterling, like get his audio, his voice gets clipped.
And then gets clipped.
And then all the terrible, awful things he says gets clipped and put out into the world, and he loses the team. It's not bad. Seeing Lawrence Fishburne play Doc Rivers is something. And I'm getting kind of a kick out of that. Okay. Cause he's trying to do the it's Doc Rivers, my voice sounds like this.
Whoa, yeah.
Uh-huh. I'm Doc Rivers and I yell at the ref so much that now my voice is inexistent.
Oh jeez. Okay.
I can't talk. Right. That's my Doc Rivers impression. I'm sorry, everybody.
It was good.
Lawrence Fishburne does a better job. Clipped everybody. Yeah, and then Winning Time went bye bye as well. Right when the Celtics win, I think at the end of that second season, the fucking stinky Celtics win this year, and God damn it, Brandon. R.I.P. Jerry West.
R.I.P. Jerry West. Okay, so real quick, R.I.P. Jerry West. Let's take this moment to shift gears and I'm going to take a pee break and then let's get back into the movie.
Okay. Be right back. All right. We're back. Let's run through the cast chronologically
the story of this, I feel like, is pretty lackadaisical. Let's talk about the cast. Josh Brolin. Let's start off with him. Man, what a delight. Right.
He's the best. I love him. And everything. Yeah. And I think that's something that I'm going to remember the most about this movie is his performance. And Clooney has moments, but, it's just kind of like little things throughout. Brolin really like carries the weight of the movie on his shoulders in this one. And, it's a stature. It's like a physical embodiment that he does. That's so stiff, and straight laced when he wants to be. But he also seems like in interviews and when he does talk in real person, like the chillest dude in the world. So for him to like turn it on and be this hard ass, like an inherent vice and everything, is really cool. And I think that this is a character that could be really like a lot more boring in someone else's hands. And with him, like everything I described earlier about his arc, I think a lot goes with just subtle things that he does throughout that shows that sense of being conflicted. When there's everything is kind of put on his table and he's having to interact with a lot of kooky characters. but yeah, do you enjoyed him at least in this movie? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, in my mind, this shows you, I mean, for better or for worse, nepotism, right? Is like Josh Brolin comes from a very well acted, very, you know, a prestigious family, and he knows how to bring it in all of his performances. You know, because there could have been a very real situation where he just only acted in bit parts and was kind of a heartthrob at a time. But I think he's had multiple phases of his career, and that is a testament to him being a working actor and just growing up in a family that I'm sure knows, like, it's just, yeah, I don't know. You just have a certain level of talent where an understanding of the industry that you show up to projects and you bring it. And it's, yeah, it's wonderful to see him act. I mean, he, you know, what I would say is that he obviously isn't the problem with this character. It's the underwrittenness of this character, because it is, ends up being so shallow and so one note.
Mm-hmm.
And it, yeah. He's allowed, he brings enough depth to it to make it interesting, but yeah, I think this,
he's the vessel for the other kooky characters to kind of do their thing. And this does kind of reek a little bit of the blank check after they have multiple phases of their career, the Coens. So,
yeah,
you know, you can have a blank check going further back.
Oh yeah.
But for this one, I think this, or maybe not even blank check, but just wanting to do something different than No Country for Old Men. Having the power and wherewithal to do whatever the hell they want, and then getting Brolin back, which it seems like they just have the best time working together, those guys.
Sure. And,
I don't, yeah, something in the interview is just like, they just wanted to torture me again or something like that.
Oh,
right. It's just, and I think in No Country for Old Men, he took his job so seriously that they would kind of fuck with him a little bit too. And in terms of just like, how, you know, it's like, should I do this? Should I do that? And I was like, yeah, whatever you want, man. Sure. You know, and like, they don't even catch it on camera or something, yeah. But they're like, yeah, I think that'd be better. We're not even gonna fucking film it, but what, you know, you just, that kind of like, and having Clooney there, it's like, it seems like they wanted all their people back, which they are prone to do as it is. But it is,
yeah,
it could, I don't know. I'm trying to think if this movie, if there needs to be a punch up in a simple certain other way, like, does it need more drama? Does it mean need certain other things? I think it,
dude, let's do it.
You kind of already said, I think it's just like in terms of like just being fleshed out and deepened a little bit of what's going on and an overall much stronger finish. I don't think this movie finishes well. I think the other memorable part is the submarine coming up and Channing Tatum and them riding the boat. I was like, that's
visually is so cool.
Yeah. And I think it's the visual Deacon.
That's kind of what I end up.
Yeah.
I end up leaning on that being my favorite part about this movie. All in, like, by and large, is there's so many fun visual elements, be it the performances of like, what is it? Stupid Moon. The big dumb moon.
I'm going to get you, Moon. And he jumps in the water. Yeah, like,
what an idiot. Oh, this is the best movie I've ever seen. But visually then all of that is so great. And, you know, when Channing Tatum is like leading them to row to the submarine and then he jumps off and the dog and all of that, it's so visually stunning. But all of it is so hollow.
Yeah.
In this,
it seems like an exercise in them seeing if they can do it,
right?
Not whether or not you should.
Mm-hmm.
Would that it were so simple?
What? Where did it was so simple? Yeah, because there's it's so weird, this movie, for me, where I love all the performances, I love a lot of the visuals,
yeah.
But then I just feel so like lacking in shit.
Mm-hmm.
Where I'm like, okay, speaking of punch-ups, let me try this. Let me try this out.
Well, why don't you speed dial Dr. Hollywood, Mr. Okay, Hollywood?
Hollywood, hey, okay, hold on. Yeah, hey. Yeah, uh-huh. Mr. Hollywood, yeah, I'm going to put you on speaker. I'm going to pitch you a punch-up of Hail Caesar. You ready?
Sounds okay. Good, baby. Lay it on me.
Sounds good. So this movie starts off like a noir, right? Because that is an homage to old Hollywood, where this is going to be a kidnapping situation, which is very similar to a noir picture. You know, somebody comes to tell him, like, hey, so-and-so has been stolen. But this is like part of a bigger thing. And the bigger thing is communism in Hollywood. And so those are the noir elements at play. And in the middle of it, there are a bunch of players that are distracting from the main character, Josh Brolin, finding out who that is. But each one of those characters represents a part of society at that time.
Mm-hmm.
No one is ever really questioned through this. And the conceit or the mystery of it all is already told you up front. And it just takes so much air out of it. It would be so much better if the George Clooney stuff had more seriousness to it. I think it is funny. Yeah. I will give it that. Uh-huh. It is funny
how I get what you're saying.
He could leave
whenever he wants, but he's just kind of like, leave. I'll have and some more cucumber sandwiches. Like, we'll come back to the study group. We'll figure this out next time.
Two cucumber sandwiches at one point. He's got two of them in his hand. And he's like, I just keep picking up cucumber sandwiches, but I don't eat them.
That's funny.
There's a lot of funny stuff in here, but something that makes Fargo so good is that there is this real commentary on people needing to survive. And like capitalism almost playing a part of that, of like, for example, like Bill Lundegaard does all of the things in Fargo because he's an idiot and needs money. So then he hires a hitman and then so on and so forth. Right. Or it's like in Big Lebowski. Sure. He gets unwillingly brought into this bigger conspiracy going on, but you get the inner workings of how serious that conspiracy is. Like something's going on that really is true and dark and is worth talking about. None of that exists in this movie.
The thing that
like what it's that, so that is whatever.
Kinda, yeah, I do agree. The thing that's funny to me about it as well is like it doesn't end up having the fangs of like a toothsome sort of script or something that actually is you could really sink your teeth into, but
right.
It has those things that everybody was kind of had these conspiracy theories about, of like old Hollywood about the communism, sure. And the Red Scare and everything, and playing with that of saying like the craziest things that you can imagine are true in terms of like a Russian submarine rolling up into the bay and like taking like away around,
like
their top like
slow essentially.
Like essentially yeah. Are there Gene Kelly at the time jumps into a fucking Russian submarine has been like double agent the whole time. It's so funny.
The and perfect like, American. And I think, yeah. I love that aspect.
And I think
he's like the perfect actor, perfect American, but he's actually secretly.
And know, he's
like
also an idiot as well. It's just about a bunch of like,
he loves that dog.
Uh-huh. But, what was I going to say? The one of the funniest parts for me was the main guy that's just like going on and on to Clooney is like, yeah, and we've been writing these scripts to promote communism within Hollywood, all the shit that the Red Scare is so afraid of. It was like, oh, they're writing these scripts to promote communist ideals. And he's like, yeah. And did you see that Western where the townspeople like took over and brought the town back to them and took it away from the bad mayor or whatever? And he's like, yeah, I guess. I don't know.
And he's just funny.
With these communists, they have like these in all of those that conspiracy is true and these communists are doing those things, but then it's so funny to think that they're like, yeah, and it's working, and it's like no one actually really like notices or cares or makes a big difference or anything. Or you see like Trumbo in the back there, Brian Cranston just being like, yeah.
Yeah,
I'm Spartacus.
The zeitgeist.
I'm Spartacus. No, I'm Fartacus.
I'm Fartacus.
That's what Trumbo said.
That's what Trump totally said. He fucking dirty dog. Yeah, no, I mean, and that's like by and large, right? I like this movie a lot, though. There's like fun fucking shit in this. The whole Tilda Swinton having two sisters thing. I was like, this is great. I'm on board. This is cool. I love Tilda Swinton's so good about it. She just comes in and she's like, and my readers are going to hit my 10,000 readers or whatever. It's awesome.
Yeah, it was like
the No Dame song.
20 million.
So good.
And then in that moment that I really enjoy, they do it like so many times that it's like, are they really doing this? And it's so funny that it happens as much as it does, is when she does it the first time is on wings as eagles. Yes. And that happens every single time after. And there's usually a big pause, but on the last one, they just talk over you can hear it calling in the background, but they're just like talking over it because they're like, you know what's going to happen. I don't know. It's to
funny. Get this movie's funny.
Can be that silly, yeah. But what about these little vignettes of the different movies? We got the Hail Caesar movie with that one actor too. It's Clancy Brown, I think his name is. I love him. He's like I forget whatever Caesar's right hand dude.
I mean, some standouts for me is that you had Highlander. Highlander was directing.
Yeah, that's right.
What was he directing? He was directing the Western movie, right?
I'm trying to remember because it was only for a brief moment. It was when he was dropping the money, and then he like hangs out for a second and goes to talk to that guy. Yeah, the Highlander dude. I forget his name.
Highlander.
That was the Channing Tatum scene.
Yes, yes, yeah. He's doing
which is hilarious. No, so that's kind of like, yeah, No Dame, like the and the Gene Kelly thing, and like amazing tap dancing scene, and it actually goes into the incredible. whole breakdown of a dance, and then you know the wire work with him jumping as well is so silly, and then just the homoeroticism is fucking hilarious of a bunch of sailors, and then just like a bunch of more sailors coming. It's like, yeah, I heard there's No Names. Like, yeah,
what are you guys doing in here? And we're just hanging out. Okay, let's all hang out together. Yeah. You're just like, yeah.
And the song starts like it. So sad and like forlorn, and they're like, man, No Dames. And by the end, they're like, No Dames.
No Dames. Loved it. I'm a big fan.
And the way it's like starts kind of subtle, and by the end, it's just
so much more.
Yeah, this dude's taint is in his face by the end. It's so good. And then yeah, the ScarJo thing as well was something that was a part of old timey Hollywood that I wasn't familiar with. I'm trying to remember the name of the actress that it's really Esther Williams is and all the synchronized swimming and everything and how that's shot from above.
Incredible.
And that whole sequence is something that is as bad as a movie like this or in whatever your opinion is. That's whatever my opinion is. How bad as you think it is, audience side of things or whatever. There are things in a Coen Brothers movie, as we were saying in Inherent Vice as well, for whoever hated Inherent Vice, it's like, how could you look at some of this stuff and not recognize and not how cool and artistic it looks. It would have to be pretty offensive otherwise for you to give it a bad score, and for some people it is, but there's scenes like this and little breakdowns throughout these vignettes of small snippets of the movies that are I think are really great. And that whole reverse scene of her going dry as she goes up, it's pretty great.
It's also great too that all of it is first presented as this starlet, and then once you hear her talk about her life, it's very like Bronxy, very New Yorky. She's very like, you know, whatever. That's why Don John next time is going to be really fun.
Oh, spoiler. Spoiler. Okay, I'm going to put it in the notes. If you don't want to know our next movie, then you know, skip ahead.
And fuckers, come on.
Otherwise, get ready for Don John next week. ScarJo is back.
Don John is back. But
that's an easy, fun joke to make too. It's like, oh yeah, the beautiful mermaid comes off and chain smokes cigarettes and has a deep raspy voice and you know is berating the crew and everything. And then her whole storyline is definitely a commentary on stuff that was going on at that time too.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's the funny thing about it to me is like, there's this whole, I always come back to how hypocritical it is for older generations to hold moral high ground on younger generations, because like every generation has its own faux pas. And like what this movie is representing, and which is so true across the time period, is people were like fucking and hooking up and having kids and getting married multiple times.
Yeah.
In the early 50s, like it's just, yeah, like no wonder why the Summer of Love existed, because it's a bunch of incredibly repressed people trying to live, like trying to hold up this code that has been set, and no one is no one's doing it. Like no one is subscribing to that. People are just having sex and doing what they're always been doing. And
in Hollywood, I mean, at that time, you are at the forefront of the monoculture at that time of deciding who and what is popular and going to be eventually become pop culture, which wasn't even really a thing yet either. Pop music was coming around.
Yeah, absolutely. But nonetheless, like being,
they're doing the Charleston.
Like, I mean, if anything, this movie makes it very clear that Hollywood is a bunch of creative loons. And like, it's almost like it says it in the movie multiple times.
The main character of this movie, his job is to keep everything under wraps. Like all he's really trying to do is just keep it out of fucking the Swinton twins,
who are idiots by and large, is how they paint them, you know.
Yeah, that I guess one is seems to be trying to be more of a not as muckraky sort of publication or something, and the other one if there was a difference between the twins, what would it be then? Because I feel like that would be, yeah, like the first one was like, oh, I don't go that stoop that low as my sister or whatever. And then the other sister comes along and she ends up having 20 million to her 19. So that was, I just felt like that was like the person that's a little bit more of the TMZ of the time is going to have that 20 million, you know, viewer or readership or whatever. Listenership.
No, you're right.
But yeah, I don't know. Even something like that is like that. That's an element that's there. All those things, all those dirty sides of things are prevalent even at this time. And I like the idea that the main character is just trying to keep things under wraps and just trying to like keep the status quo, even so much so that he goes into that one house that's, she's getting like a photo shoot done and it's like out of her contract. She's not allowed to do it. And he like fucking slaps her across the face multiple times. And that was just a clear sign of like what, you know, these times. And also like it felt like the Coen brothers trying to really cater to how that would have been shot in that time, in that movie, because it was just such a quick like close up, and he did the, you know, just like the, I don't know, fucking, it seemed like very classic way of shooting a slap in like an old timey sort of slapsticky sort of way. But all that to say, these little pieces that I'm kind of rambling on about that I really enjoy, I'm not sure, as you've been kind of leaning on as well, is like, I'm not sure if it makes if it makes the whole thing good, you know, just like all these pieces. But yeah, before, I mean, I can look through any final notes I have as well. You notice
I took John Daly.
Did you notice him?
Oh, of course I did. That was my first. That was fun, right? Yeah, right off the rib. There it is, two Johns.
He was two Johns right there. Slips him the money or whatever. And they're constantly looking at the watch. I kind of liked that element of putting yourself in the perspective of the main character, constantly looking at his watch. Kind of made me feel like that. I gotta get moving, because it really takes place in a day. It really takes place in 24 hours.
Interesting.
My favorite scene is the Ray Fiennes scene. That's my favorite scene.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Do you think funny. that's your favorite or?
Yeah.
He gets his moment to shine, and it's just in that I scene. Like, you could have a Ralph Fiennes, and you could have him just show up in one scene because you're the Coen brothers.
It's just so simple.
And the back and forth and the chemistry between them two, they just, I don't know. It was so good. Lawrence Lorenz, drippingly, rueful, like all, I don't know, all that good stuff. He goes in and he's complaining in the office as well. The other scene, he's game and gamey.
And gamey.
So, and I can't do it justice.
That's how people describe me.
How he delivers it. Oh, Brandon Sables. Yeah, he's game. And gamey.
And gamey. Yep.
That's what it was so simple.
Was it so simple?
It would be unethical to share in your own ransom. We're like, Clooney's like, well, what if I go, I share a little bit of the money that you guys use? Like, that would be unethical. That's like, well, that's like
so funny.
Coen brothers line classic. Yeah.
Funny. This movie is funny.
Allerin, whatever his face is it hard to dance with all those bananas on your head? Talk to the Chiquito.
She's so sweet. Oh my God. I love that. And then they have that whole bit where they're like trying to like, well, I told her that I was in a movie. And then they have that whole thing. And then the next sister shows up and then they're like, so we're in a movie. It's awesome.
And he lassos her fingers with his, like, I ordered plain spaghetti, no sauce, just so I can do this trick to every girl I meet.
So funny. I love it. God, this movie's good.
Francis McDormand, the whole editing scene. And seeing a woman editor is very much
Scorsese.
As the sexism of the time and everything, that was a profession that a lot of women did really well was editor. And I don't know. That was
good. Dude, thank you. Yes. Hell yeah, dude. Thank you for bringing that up. Fuck yeah.
I thought that was a cool little touch of having, having a woman just, Patton Oswalt, I think, has a great bit about all that, but also the dangers of it, that I'm like, oh my God, she's smoking and next to all that film, my God. And then the scarf thing was like, Jesus. And then she just carries on. And then Jonah Hill is on the poster of this movie and like top billed, and he's only in one scene with
like 5 minutes,
3 to 5 lines. And his whole deal and with ScarJo is pretty funny too. I mean, and for him to be a professional person is pretty great. Yeah, of like that's something that he can just fill in to be whatever is needed to be. However, all of the stuff between him and Scarlett Johansson to happen off screen, I just a little something else could have been fun, but also I think it caters to that other point, I guess, of like it worked itself out in a way that he never would have expected, maybe. And if he had been meddling too much, it might have not worked its way out, in that way. So I don't know what the message is there, but I think there is a something a little bit of the chaos with Coen Brothers movies of like sometimes things go the certain direction that human intervention can create more problems, or there's a certain weird twisted fate to to their movies as well.
How twisted is fate.
Jonah Hill. Wish that he gone straight.
Jonah Hill at this point, I mean, it's understandable him being on the poster, but nonetheless, it's still insane how little he is in this movie to warrant it. Mm-hmm. Like, that's, I think, the thing to talk about, right? Is because, like, Jonah Hill leading up to this was in Wolf of Wall Street already. So, I mean,
this was after Wolf of Wall Street?
Wolf of Wall Street's 2013. Wow. So 3 years still. You know what happened before this? 21 and 22 Jump Street had happened.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, getting the Channing Tatum and Jonah Hill. And
right. Yeah. However, Channing Tatum was brought so much more to this movie than Jonah Hill did.
for the, yeah, I mean, whatever the script was. I mean, I guess Jonah Hill, I guess, did what was necessary. But yeah, for him to be so highly billed is so strange. It would be so much better for him to not be listed at all and just be that's a fun cameo I didn't expect. Like, right, Frances totally. McDormand isn't listed there at all, and she had the same amount of time. But yeah, that last part with Channing Tatum on the submarine is very good in his silly wig. And one of the interviews with Alryn, whatever his face is, was talking about how Coen Brothers, the way they write the dialect in their script in a way, so all that Southern accent stuff, it's like spelled out in a way for him to be able to read it in that way, which I thought was as cool as a from a writer perspective as them, not just as directors, as fun writers. Must be fun to read a script of theirs.
I just experienced this yesterday and today. I have that Libby app, the free app for books for your local library. Mm-hmm. And right now I'm reading this book called James.
Ah, The James.
The James. And get this, you want a mind blown? It is from the perspective of N-word Jim from Huckleberry Finn.
Oh, wow. When was it written?
Not that long ago.
That sounds interesting.
It is, and it's very interesting. It's incredibly interesting because the perspective of it is like there's a lot of like, white people are showing up. Okay, start talking differently.
Right. This kid wants me to fucking.
Yeah, dude. This fucking piece of shit kid. Hawk's coming, you know, and it's really, really funny and really good.
Okay.
It's let me shout it out. It's so good.
People should know.
It's so funny because like at first it's like Huckleberry Finn where N-word Jim's character, you're like, oh, this is like,
who's this Tom Sawyer fuck?
Like, and also Huckleberry too, like it's, you have to get into the dialect of it. And this book is so good at getting you into the dialect of it, just like Huckleberry Finn. I think I have to say, okay, James is the name of the book, and it's by Percival Everett.
Excellent. Well, yeah, that's why I always remembered, reading Huckleberry Finn in school and thinking that same thing with all the dialogue. And
me too, yeah.
It was a lot of fun for me because I'd always acted out in my head regardless if they did that or not. Mm-hmm. That's how I read books. It's just like I have this whole world in my head, and I do dramatic timing and everything of the lines. Maybe it takes me a little bit longer to read, but it makes it a lot more fun. I'm like,
it's so fun though.
That's why, sometimes
dude, you check this book out.
I should do audiobooks, but I think sometimes with audiobooks, I'm like, I kind of like to come up with own way to read it in my head. Cool. That's pretty much it. I think, my last note was that some of those backdrops for the Hail Caesar scenes were actually the ones used in Ben-Hur.
Yeah. Okay.
Cool. Which is pretty cool. And you actually like kind of focus on it and you're like, oh, wow. Yeah. It was like very intricate.
Ben-Hur is a very cool movie.
That was the one that, we watched Ten Commandments every Easter, but Ben-Hur was definitely another one that my family liked. The Charlton Heston, the Planet of the Apes. We were, we liked him. Ten Commandments, I remember being enjoyable too, but been a while. Yeah.
Ben-Hur a while.
Ben-Hur a while.
Gotta pee.
I am Farticus. Yeah, go for it. I'm gonna start bringing up reviews. Go for it, and I'll vamp a little bit here with your folks. I'm sure he won't be too long. Let's check out those numbers again. It is a certified fresh 86% by the critics. It is a poopy doopy snoopy 44% by the audience on Rotten Tomatoes. Let's check out some scores here. I gotta wait for Brandon. We'll be right back. I'm just gonna be right back. I shouldn't do this without my guy. Return momentarily. We are back. Let's check out some critic reviews. 86% by the critics. Let's start with Richard Brody from The New Yorker. Scintillating, uproarious, substantial, and playfully personal.
Okay.
Sarah Michelle Fetter's MovieFreak.com. In other words, it's perfect. And like the best of the duo's achievements, it's an ending I'm going to be pondering for quite a long time to come. I'm not sure about the end. Yeah, I don't know. The ending did not hit me in the same way. I do like this movie as well. Max Weiss, Baltimore Magazine. The greatest thing about Hail Caesar is that its loose structure allows the Coens to just mess around with the things they like.
Okay, that's true. Okay. Now we're tuned in.
From Jason Bailey, Flavor Wire.
Oh,
it is all in all mid-level Coens. But as so many others have noted, mid-level Coens still tops most other filmmakers at their peak. Oh, shit. He out-jerked, himself,
it.
Man.
That guy gets it. Oh, yeah. Fuck. That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
That's the opinion here.
Let's do Peter Bradshaw at Guardian. It's not encumbered with significance, but richly affectionate and very entertaining. Geez. Hail Caesar is something to be greeted as a gorgeous exercise in style. From Allison Wilmore, last one here from BuzzFeed News. The Coen brothers' new comedy isn't quite an homage to 1950s Hollywood, but it's not a spoof of it either. It strikes that tone of crisp drollness that's their specialty and that some people misread as aloofness or contempt, but it's not.
But it's not.
The audience said 44%.
Yep, that's what they did say.
They said no spank you no, to you, Mr. and Mr. Coen.
Caesar.
Mr.'s Coens. Chris Bowling gave it a 1-star here on Amazon, titled, "It may have been a great idea lost in time and never fully realized. I am a big fan of the Coen brothers. This movie, not so much. It feels half-baked for one. None of the characters are given any backstory, just quickly introduced through a series of movie shorts that seem to be underwhelming compared to the lavish spectacles they are made to pay homage to. Maybe it was the fact that this movie was not shot in 70mm or Technicolor or Panavision or any of the older formats that seem to pop on the big screen. These, by comparison, seem flat. The camera work uninspired. The voice over languidly offers little to propel this plot thin story forward. And lastly, the conclusions are hastily and dismissively tacked on. It may have been a great idea lost in time and never fully realized. A major disappointment from the Coens. They would have been put on ice quicker than Barton Fink for making this stinker in classic Hollywood."
Oh my God. Ooh, okay. Ooh,
right. You need that Barton Fink reference.
Yeah, I did.
We'll do Barry Memory, 1-star titled, "A Real Flop. I do not understand why this movie was made. It goes nowhere and has no real story. I knew that the critics didn't like it when I ordered it, but I have seen several movies that the critics hated that have turned out pretty good. With all of the stars involved, I figured that it was worth the price. Boy, was I wrong on this one. This could have been a pretty good movie. The storyline could have been developed into something interesting in several different ways. However, when it reached a point where the story could have gone good, it stopped. Yeah, I liked looking at Scarlett Johansson."
Oh, God.
"But it was not worth the price of the movie."
All right, guy. All right. Jesus Christ. Well, anyways.
From Greg Fitzgerald, titled,
"Hi, Larry." This fucking guy. This piece of shit.
Titled, "God Awful, A Wasted Cast, 1-star. It's rare when I have to click the off button on my remote third way through a $6 rental, but this is probably the worst movie I've seen in many years. I was especially disappointed given the cast. Poorly written with unconnected scenes and some bizarre tie into communism. Scenes were incredibly long with ponderous dialogue. No action and a real mediocre performance by Josh Brolin. I love quirky movies, but this was beyond quirky.
Oh, stop.
What's worse is that we had friends over after dinner to watch it and had to apologize for such a horrible flick. One more thing. Don't let the preview fool you. The shots selected have nothing to do with the plot. Oops, forgot there wasn't a plot."
Oopsies.
From ARW One Star, titled Waste of Time. There wasn't a single interesting thing that happened in this movie. It wasn't funny, clever, or the least bit entertaining. I watched intently, soaking in the dialogue, keeping track of the characters, expecting some huge payoff at the end, and managed to fall asleep 10 minutes before it ended. My wife warned me not to rewind because nothing happened, but I couldn't imagine this being the case. Not after all the effort I had put in. Yes.
Oh my God.
Nothing happened. As a parent, kid-free nights are rare, and this is how we wasted ours. I want my time back. I feel for that person.
I feel for that
Speaking person. Of Ray Fiennes, I feel like they're going to pull a Ray Fiennes and invite that person to a nice private
dinner menu.
On an island with a very exclusive menu, yeah. I'll do one more from, I'll do a letterbox here, one for the final one. It's one star from
What's your letterbox?
They've
What's
got it too.
Letterbox? Do that. Yeah.
Go. One star. Craptastically underwhelming. An idiotic menagerie of silver screen era nitwits blended with the kind empty humor that brands itself as quirky when it's just obnoxious. The things I hate about this Coen Brothers movie are some of the same reasons for why I hate most of Wes Anderson's filmography. And this last one from Garcia was one star. The only good thing about this was that there was a female editor, and even that they ruined by trying to fucking murder her. I mean, it was the scarf. It was an incredible situation. You don't wear a cape as a superhero. That's passe. As far as the polarization between the two sides of things, I think it's pretty clear. We've been mentioning throughout that this is a movie by people who have been in Hollywood quite a while, and it's their kind of take on it in the old-timey Hollywood side of things. But I think it's also trying to make little commentaries of things that have always been in Hollywood and that are still in it now. But through it all, I think some of the overall story beats and where it was leading to was not satisfying for the audience. And I think just being steeped in that world, a lot of the critics were going to be a little bit more forgiving. Doesn't work for every movie about Hollywood, but this one, that it being a Coen Brothers movie, and they did get a lot of accuracy in terms of the presentation. And I think Roger Deakins, was a big part of that as well. That was something stuff that they recognized. But as far as the story goes and piecing all those disparate kind of pieces together and all those factors that are really cool on paper, just didn't work for audience members and my interpretation. Should I continue with my review, or is there anything else you wanted to add?
Oh, shit. That's unlike your review, but
Just carry on. Yeah. I was kind of getting into it.
Please.
And
I was doing the Ring of Mikkola.
Yeah, we're in Elden Ring DLC territory. So we got a
Ring of Mikkola.
Every now and then you got to drop a Ring of Mikkola. You know, mine is like a Dragon Fist one where he just starts banging his chest with his fist. That's my favorite one right now.
Dude.
Or also the one where you just go into the fetal position when you can't beat a boss. Yeah. It's great.
It's great.
10 out of 10.
Elden Ring. Elden Ring.
Hail Caesar.
You know what's good? Caesar. Elden Ring,
baby.
But how is it? Hail Caesar, James.
Hail Caesar is a good movie. I think this is a good movie. It's not Coen Brothers' best movie, and it's not perfect, and it's not something that leaves its mark in a super deep way on me. Even something that is like Big Lebowski, where the meaninglessness of it all and the story that kind of goes nowhere hits in a way that's fun and something I would watch over and over again. This one doesn't quite get to that mark, but I visually, I think, was really kind of soaking in that a little bit. Really registering that it was a Roger Deakins movie this time, I think was the first time I was like, oh, I didn't realize that maybe the past couple times. So that was something that was made it go down very smooth. but I think I needed it to have a stronger finish. I don't know. There's something that it kind of peters out for me a little bit at the end beyond like the summer. I think the submarine is pretty fun and Channing Tatum going out there and everything. But all those pieces, I don't think are like the sum of its whole a little bit, I guess is what I'm trying to say. I like them all separately, but then when you put them all together, I don't think it makes like a perfect movie and one that is on the top of the Coen Brothers list. So yeah, I'd say probably.
What's it called?
I'll do 77. I feel like 70s, 80s. I know that's like maybe safe or whatever, but
I feel really good
about like a, yeah, like a 3.5 out of 5 situation. Like 3.5 out of 5 would be probably be my Letterboxd.
Yeah.
If I had to do that. But I think this won't be the last time I watch it. I could see myself like, you know, further down the line.
Yeah, kind of a little bit,
fucking Hail Caesar. And even if I don't finish it, whatever, I just like those snippets of all the old timey Hollywood stuff was really fun this time. And the synchronized swimming and the Western stuff and the stuff that had like a practical effect to it was pretty cool. Pretty cool. I'll give it a 77.
On to you,
Brandini.
So I just posted my letterbox. I might be doing this from here on out. I'm going to post my letterbox.
Live letterbox review.
Live letterbox review. So I gave this. So my letterbox review is this. It's a 2.5 stars.
Okay.
It's 2.5 stars.
Uh-huh.
And my review is, there was some fun people back then.
Say that one more time. What? Were that a tour so simple?
Exactly. There were some fun people had back then.
There were some fun people had back then.
Yep. That was my, exactly. Okay. And
2.5 stars. So how does that translate into mates? Are you going straight 50 then? Is that the star system translates to the popcorn system? We talked at the very beginning of my intro, Rotten Tomatoes math is hard.
Yeah, it's definitely not. That review is its review, and this is this review.
Oh, that's your letterbox persona.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
That's a different guy.
A different guy.
Gotcha.
Okay. So I'm not beholden to that. Gotcha. I just want to let you know that's what my letterbox was. Uh-huh. So for me, for this movie, is there's a lot of fun that I had in this movie, but it is because of the appreciation for old Hollywood, which is an interesting thing for a director like them to do, is to talk about their like infatuation with making movies, for them being interested in making movies and what they're all about. And there are interesting things that they are focusing on in this movie, but they have spent zero time actually analyzing how they feel about this. Mm. So this ends up just becoming a very like self-indulgent movie. Mm-hmm. And in the grand scheme of things, what I love about the Coen brothers is representative in this movie for sure, visually. Agreed. But the like commentary, the like, you know, mm-hmm. it's not there at all. And so I kind of don't respect the movie a little bit that they did that, where their take on old Hollywood has so little teeth.
Mm.
For directors that made Fargo, like, you should mm-hmm. have teeth into this. Big Lebowski, teeth into why
Barton Fink. I mean, that's a little more claustrophobic.
Yeah. and Burn V. Okay.
Not about the whole system as much, but yeah.
They're so, but yeah. The perspective of this movie is not that interesting, but the visuals are really great. And there are some really funny stuff in this that I LOL. Okay. So what? Yeah. I fucking LOL.
you raffled.
So, but nonetheless, I'm going to give this a 70%.
Nice. Respect. Yeah. Very respectable. I think it's a solid flick. And it is something that I feel like Coen Brothers, for them, that one guy or whatever he said is like, it's like mid-level Coen Brothers maybe, but it's also Coen Brothers. So
yeah,
at base level, it's still going to be pretty watchable. And I found myself really kind of tuned in, and some of our movies, I'll take a break and do something totally. Else and come back and, or make it a two-parter. And this one, yeah, it was pretty simple to just kind of take it on in. I think it was like an hour 40, and
it was, yeah,
pretty fun, and
love it for it. Yeah
and we that was our Coen Brothers ep. We did a Coen Brothers, we did a PTA. I feel so esteemed and sophisticated, and I feel like a real film bro.
So to the film bro thing, is between the two, how do you feel about them? You know, like what one did you like more?
Oh, Inherent Vice. Absolutely.
And why? And why?
That one has grown. I think I've seen them both three times. Maybe the first time Inherent Vice, I didn't get all the way through, but essentially three times. And Inherent Vice like is just getting better and better each time I watch it, kind of.
Totally.
And I don't see that Hail Caesar has that much depth for me to go back and be like, oh, right. I never noticed this, or oh, you know, maybe there would be certain little things, but you know, just Inherent Vice is something that I'm sure you would say that tenfold about the actual book Inherent Vice, is that you can just keep on digging into that and find new things. And that is very dense, and this is not so much. It's pretty surface level. Yeah. Hail Caesar has like some fun commie stuff, but all of it is just like playing on some of the surface level things that we already kind of know about old Hollywood. Yeah. And if you want something with teeth, yeah, I guess that was the Babylon thing of it all too. Of showing old Hollywood. That was like
totally
really like showing you those ugly sides as well. But then by the end, it's like, aren't movies the best thing ever? You know, and like it's able to show kind of the worst.
You love movies here,
and it's so sincere in how it does it. And yeah, I guess Hail Caesar's a little bit. Yeah, they're kind of cynical kind of guys, but if you can see George Clooney acting like a fucking idiot, it's pretty fun too. All right, well we've had a blast here as always. We love movies. We love those movies. We
love those movies.
Speaking of which, we're gonna talk about another one next time. Already heard it earlier on, or if you missed the spoiler alert, we are doing Don John, baby. A Joe Golev.
Oh, dude.
Let's effing Joe Golev. Scar Joe. Let's fucking Julianne Moe. Let's fucking Toto Dance.
Oh, dance. Yeah.
Wow, Brie Larson. Look at all these peeps. This is a movie. If you don't know what Don John is, yeah, it's Joseph Gordon-Levitt. He wrote and directed it. What does it say on the premise here? It says New Jersey bartender John Martello knows what's important: his friends, his family, his car, his church, his sexual conquests, and porn. In fact, John is a porn addict and has never had a genuine relationship with a woman. However, when he meets Barbara, he has to change his operating methods because Barbara won't be bedded easily. For the first time in his life, John begins a real courtship, but his obsession with erotica threatens to ruin everything. Wow. Who wrote that?
Oh my God. I'm so glad I got to see you realize what this movie is about.
I remember when this came out. Yeah, I just never.
You had no idea that that's what it's going to be about.
kind of, I remember seeing the trailer when it was coming out. I knew it was kind of like had to do with the porn obsession. Porn? Some, yeah. Uh-huh. And then what, Julianne Moore is his mom? Mm-mm. Okay, well, we'll find out. Hell yeah. All right. Don John, John Don, Brandon John. That's what I'm going to call James you next time. Remind me, Brandon John. It's been a true pleasure, as I like to say. Yeah, did I even give those scores? 80% by the critics for this movie, Don John, and 58% by the audience. We love you all. If you'd like to watch us live, it's twitch.tv/polarizedpod.
Do join that. Yeah.
Send us a line at polarizethepod@gmail.com. Leave a rating on Apple Podcasts with a little review and you get the little star system there too. No tomatoes on Apple Podcasts, but we would love to hear what you have to think. And we hope you've enjoyed yourself, Brandon. To you, good sir, have a wonderful night, and I will see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye.